If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, Matt. So I was doing some research on groundbreaking inventions for like when they were invented, the time frame.
Yeah.
And I realized that the most groundbreaking invention ever was the shovel.
Man. See, you're gone a week. And I get a joke like that and it catches me off guard.
Yep. Not used to it.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing okay.
Good. Good. So as a little peek behind the curtain, I have been out of town for a week. So if I'm a little rusty on this, that's why. This is the first time we're recording since I got back. So I will apologize for any rust that I'm knocking off in this time. But
it's Matt, not so much that the time off gets him rusty. It's that he's been off doing, you know, vacation-y stuff. That gets anybody rusty to anything other than, you know, maybe doing some 6 ounce curls and rubbing your feet in the sand. That's about it.
That's exactly right. You can tell I've been gone because my forehead untan line is a little deeper. I wear a hat all the time, and being out in the sun for a week has really made my forehead bright white.
Adam has hair and wears a hat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I never, ever see Adam without a hat. I mean, you would think if anybody sees him without a hat besides Ashley, it's me. And yeah. I never see him without a hat. And I have no hair. And now I have learned I can no longer wear hats.
Well, that sucks. I wouldn't have to wear a hat.
The hats don't fit me anymore. They slide. They actually push my ears down.
Oh, yeah.
And if I get one too tight, then, you know, where it'll actually sit right, then it gives me a headache because I've got no hair to cushion it.
Maybe you've just explained something to me. I worked with a guy who had no hair, and every hat he wore, he tucked his ears inside of it.
Yeah, I can't do that because, number one, it looks ridiculous.
It looks ridiculous, yeah. But maybe you just explained that to me. He was holding his hat up because he had no hair. But... speaking of rust and vacation rust, I'm getting off track. So as we always say, go over and check out our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. We have multiple different levels that you can sign up for. I'm throwing up the QR code there on the screen. When you sign up to become a patron, we have hundreds of episodes in a back catalog.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're signing up new, you are going to get hundreds of episodes that you have not heard before that you can go and listen to.
Hundreds.
We've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
So if you're not a patron already, what you doing, man? Come on. But we have multiple different levels, and every level gets a bonus episode. It's like a short Graveyard Tales episode. Same topics that we would normally talk about. We might have found an article mm-hmm. on that topic, and there's just not enough information to do a full episode, so we put it out as a Patreon episode. Then if you move up to the $5 from the $1, you get the bonus episode, plus you get ad-free audio and video versions of the episodes. And that ad-free audio can go straight into your podcatcher with the RSS feed. So you don't have to go and listen to it technically on Patreon. You can listen to it in your podcatcher wherever you get it. Then if you move up to the $10, you get all that. Plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which is me and Matt doing whatever. No rhyme or reason for what we do. We just, if we think that'll be cool this week, we do it. Like tonight, I've got an interesting little game for Matt because he likes to hit me with trivia. So every now and then I will throw trivia at him. Normally I like to tell him stories of people who survive things they shouldn't. We have eaten gross jelly beans. We've drank gross sodas. So who knows what you're going to get? It's literally Side Quest is literally what it is. It's like Graveyard Tales is the main quest. That Side Quest is what we, Matt and I, do on the side. But go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales. Check it out. So, Matt, on that topic, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
So tonight I was telling Adam when we picked this place, I said, you know what? This is unique in a lot of ways. I don't know that we have done many, if maybe any, significant haunted places in Wisconsin. Okay. And we certainly haven't done a haunted place that has as many stories from well-known people, even celebrities,
mm-hmm.
multiple stories from famous people, which is really unusual. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about places where, oh, and by the way, you know, Mark Twain stayed here and yeah. said he saw something, or, you know, Eddie George stayed here and it scared him every once in a while. But tonight's place, it's almost nothing but.
Right, right.
And we are going to talk about the haunted hotel known as the Pfister Hotel. No jokes, please.
Yep.
Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. We've already made them. Yeah, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yeah, we've already made all the jokes. So y'all can just, just keep them. Just make them in your car, laugh, and then we'll move on.
Yep.
But the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I had not heard of this place. And I came across it and I shot it over to Adam and I said, hey, check this place out. I think our listeners would really dig this because it's got that very unique hook about mm-hmm. it. So, you know, and I'll tell you this, digging into it, it's got a really unique backstory. Not so much that it was, we've talked about a lot of hotels, Adam, that people are like, you know, this pull themselves up by their bootstraps. I'm going to build my dream hotel and we're mm-hmm. going to have it. It has all that. Okay. But it's got a lot of extra stuff as it came about.
Yeah.
That I don't know that a lot of other hotels can say, you know, right. Some very, very unique technology for the time. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
that's one of my favorite parts about my research that we did.
You know, even today, it still has a lot of the qualities from the gentleman that built it.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's get into the history because it really plays into why the Pfister is so famous and maybe why it's haunted.
Right.
In the way that it is. And you'll understand right. more when we get into those stories.
Yep. And as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. If we talk about it, it's sourced and referenced down there. Now, when people think about haunted hotels, Matt, names like the Stanley or the Crescent Hotel are usually ones that come to mind. But tucked away in downtown Milwaukee, Wisconsin, stands another grand hotel that's earned a reputation all its own. It's a place where presidents have slept, celebrities have checked in, like we talked about mm-hmm. earlier, baseball players mm-hmm. have reported some stuff. And they reportedly refused to stay there as well. So we'll all talk about that in a minute.
You know it's active when people are like, I'm not going back.
Right, right. But to understand why this hotel became such an icon, like Matt said, we have to travel back. We got to travel back to Milwaukee in the late 1800s. Now, at that time, the city was booming. And by the 1880s, Milwaukee had grown from a frontier settlement into one of America's greatest industrial cities. Brewing had made names like Pabst, Schlitz, and Miller famous across the country, but beer wasn't the only business driving the city's success. Matt, we made jokes, and we said no jokes about the Pfister. So all I'm going to say is we were talking about the Pfister Hotel, doing research all week, all this stuff. And then I have to talk about Schlitz as well.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of those two names have had jokes in my head all week. And I have a joke that I will tell you on SideQuest about Schlitz malt liquor.
Okay.
That I'll tell you about. Awesome. But
don't anyway. Say beer, say bull. Schlitz malt liquor, bull.
Now, Milwaukee had become a manufacturing powerhouse. They had machine shops, tanneries, foundries, flour mills, and factories lining the river and the railroads. So thousands of immigrants, particularly from Germany, had transformed the city into one of the wealthiest communities in the Midwest. The streets bustled with horse-drawn wagons carrying raw materials to factories and finished goods to railroad depots. Steam whistles echoed through the city from sunrise until sunset, while elegant new office buildings and mansions began appearing alongside older brick structures. Milwaukee was becoming a city that wanted the rest of the country to notice it. Now, there was just one problem that they had. For all of its prosperity, Milwaukee didn't have a truly luxurious hotel. So businessmen arriving from Chicago or New York expected elegant accommodations comparable to those that they'd find in larger cities. Well, instead, Milwaukee, they had respectable hotels, but none of them could honestly claim to be among the finest in America, quote unquote. Now, that realization wasn't lost on one of the city's wealthiest families. So, into our story now enters Guido Pfister. You don't hear people named Guido anymore. That name has gone away for some reason.
It has.
Maybe it's still there, and I just don't know the right people, but I don't hear people introducing themselves as Guido anymore.
Well, not where we live.
True.
If you lived in New York, maybe, you know, you'd meet some Guidos. I don't know what it is. There's not a, like, I don't meet people named like Mario or anything like that. You know, yeah. I don't know any Luigis. I know they're out there, but you know, not in the South. You just don't meet those people.
Yeah.
Unless you're traveling outside the South.
Yeah, the Italian population isn't that high here in Texas. The German population, however,
oh yeah,
through the roof.
Yeah,
but
I meet a lot of Rusties and Butches and
Jim
stuff
Bobs,
like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Earls.
Every one of them, I know multiple people with all of those names.
Yeah, right. And some of them have all those names crammed into one name.
Sometimes
Jim Bob Rusty Earl.
Yeah.
Now Guido had immigrated from Germany as a young man, and eventually helped build one of the most successful leather companies in the nation, Pfister & Vogel Leather Company. So, leather was big business in the 19th century America. Every shoe, saddle, harness, belt, trunk, and countless industrial products depended on high-quality leather, and the Pfister family had become incredibly wealthy supplying it. But Guido wasn't interested in simply making money. Like many successful businessmen of the Gilded Age, he wanted to leave behind something permanent, a monument to Milwaukee itself. together with his son, Charles Pfister, they envisioned constructing a hotel unlike anything the Midwest had ever seen. It wouldn't simply provide rooms for travelers. It would announce to the country that Milwaukee had arrived. So construction began in 1890. The family hired renowned Milwaukee architect Henry C. Coach to design the building. Now, I'm opting to pronounce it Coach. It's K-O-C-H. I just can't pronounce it Cock.
Or Cook. Like, I know a guy, the last name is Cook.
I went to school with a girl whose name was spelt this same way, and her last name was Cock. I just can't do that in this episode. So it's Coach. There have been many things, Matt, that I have done for this show, but pronouncing it that way in this episode, I will not do.
Okay.
So
I'll say Jones.
I should just call him Henry. Yeah. I'm going to do that. Henry had already designed churches, courthouses, schools, and public buildings throughout Wisconsin. His reputation for combining beauty with practicality made him the perfect choice for such an ambitious project. Now, the style he selected reflected one of the most popular architectural movements of the era, the Romanesque Revival. Even today, standing outside the hotel is impressive. Instead of sleek glass walls or steel panels, visitors are greeted by massive stone and brick walls that seem fortress-like, really.
Mm-hmm.
Rounded Romanesque arches frame the windows and entrances. Heavy masonry gives the building an incredible sense of permanence, as though it had always been there and always will be. Rather than emphasizing height through delicate ornamentation like the Gothic architecture, Romanesque buildings project strength and stability.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly the image that the Pfister family wanted. They weren't building a fashionable hotel. They were building a landmark. Now, the exterior only hinted at what guests would discover once they stepped inside. Imagine, you arrive in Milwaukee in 1893 after spending days traveling by train. You walk through enormous wooden doors and suddenly find yourself surrounded by polished marble floors, richly carved mahogany woodwork, elaborate plaster ceilings, glittering chandeliers, sweeping staircases, huge fireplaces, and richly decorated parlors filled with expensive furniture. The hotel was designed to impress at every turn. No expense had been spared. The project ultimately cost roughly $1 million. That was a staggering amount of money at the time. When you adjust for inflation, that's equivalent to several tens of millions of dollars today.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
for one hotel.
It's amazing. You don't even think about people in the 1800s having millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just don't. I mean, when, you know, a loaf of bread was like a nickel.
Yep.
You know, if that.
Well, and technically, they probably didn't have true millions. They had thousands, which were
well, yeah,
the same as having millions today. You and I would be millionaires if we went back to the early 1800s.
Well, let's go. Come on.
All right. I'm down. I've said, Matt, I want to go to the birth of this country and buy up a bunch of Texas land and will it to the great, 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 great descendant named Adam Ballinger, and it can't be sold until he gets his hands on it.
Hey, dig this. I just looked it up. I just picked it. 1870, a loaf of bread typically cost about 5 cents, a nickel.
Mm-hmm. You did good.
I'm clairvoyant.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start calling you Claire then from now on. That is crazy that you got the right amount. It's almost like you've been there. Michael would then pull in the old joke and go, well, it was when you were born.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, mm-hmm. You think I'm old, kid. Just wait. Now, it wasn't simply one of the nicest hotels in Wisconsin. It was intended to compete with the greatest hotels anywhere in America. Now, The most remarkable thing about the fissure, though, wasn't what guests could see. It was what they couldn't see. Because hidden behind those elegant walls was technology that bordered on science fiction for many Americans at the time. All right, Matt. So let's talk about tonight's sponsor, 11 Labs. Now, the other day I called a company and got the automated customer service thing that you get before you get a human.
Oh, yeah.
And it did the whole, if you will state your problem, we'll, you know, find a solution. I don't know what happened, but during the middle of it saying that, it just went, I didn't understand your response, and then repeated itself. And then it almost got done, and Nash barked, and it said, well, I didn't understand you, and I'm just pulling my hair out.
By the time you were done, you had purchased a tractor.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is, I know the companies don't want it to be that way either. That's just what they've got to work with.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why 11 Agents gives businesses AI-powered voice and chat agents that can actually help their customers. They can listen, understand what somebody needs, look up account information, process requests, and when something really needs a human touch, hand it off to a real person. That means customers can get help faster, while your support team can focus on the issues that actually need them. And it's all powered by 11 Labs, the company known for incredibly realistic, natural-sounding AI voices in more than 70 languages. 11 Agents is already handling more than 10 million conversations every week, and it's built for enterprise use with SOC2, HIPAA, and PCI certifications. So if your business deals with a lot of customer calls or support requests, 11 Agents can help take some of that workload off your team. If you run a business or handle customer service operations across support, sales, or marketing, you can start with a demo at 11labs.io/grave.
That's right. See how 11 Agents can fit into your workflow and help build experiences that customers will actually love. 11labs.io/grave. ELEVENLABS.io/grave. Remember, this was 1893. Many homes still relied on oil lamps for light.
Mm-hmm.
Indoor plumbing was far from universal. Electricity was only beginning to spread through American cities. Most hotels still depended heavily on gas lighting, coal stoves, and shared bathrooms.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, you think, and I'll talk about this more in a second, but you think opulent hotel of the time, you don't think, oh, I got to share a bathroom with other people.
Yeah.
But you did at this time.
Well, I read a statement in an article about the Pfister that said there were people that would have stayed here that didn't have electricity in their homes,
mm-hmm,
and were experiencing electricity in their hotel room.
Yep.
You know, that's a pretty amazing thing. If you stop and think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you go to a hotel now and they have something like, oh, look, the TV drops down from the ceiling. I don't have this at home.
Mm-hmm.
You
know?
I mean, you're like, yeah, that's kind of cool, but
I don't have a mini fridge in my bedroom
but
at home.
I think we take electricity in our homes for granted so much.
Oh, yeah.
And these people would have, like you said, been living with oil lamps for light and wood burning stoves for heat. And, you know, they walk into this hotel, this beautiful hotel, into a room where you can go flick of a switch and there's light. I mean, how that would have almost seemed supernatural in and of itself.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now, like I said, most of the hotels there, at that time depended on the gas lighting, coal stoves, shared bathrooms, but the Pfister changed all of that for people. The hotel featured its own electric generating plant, producing electricity for the entire building.
That, see, that's amazing, too.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the Winchester Mystery House. You know, there were very unique aspects of that, that they produced their own power.
Right. And instead of dim gas lamps, guests enjoyed bright electric lighting throughout the hotel. Now, it wasn't just more convenient for people. It was also safer. Gas lighting carried constant risk of fire, explosion, and carbon monoxide. Electricity represented the future, and the Pfister embraced it completely. Then they had elevators. Today, we hardly think about stepping into an elevator, but in the late 19th century, they were still a novelty for many people. Instead of dragging heavy trunks up several flights of stairs, guests just rode comfortably up to their room. Now, the experience itself became part of the attraction. For many visitors, the hotel wasn't just somewhere to stay. It was somewhere to experience the future. Now, the innovations continued inside every guest room as well. This is, Matt, my most favorite thing about this hotel at the time. Perhaps the hotel's most famous technology achievement was something so ordinary today that it's easy to overlook. Every room had its own temperature control. Now, while historians debate whether the Pfister was absolutely the first hotel in America to offer individual thermostat controls, it was unquestionably among the earliest and most advanced. Think about how revolutionary that would have seemed. Most luxury hotels in the 1890s had central heating. A huge coal-fired boiler in the basement would produce steam or hot water that circulated through radiators. The problem was that every room received roughly the same amount of heat. If your room was roasting, your only options were to crack open a window or ask the staff to adjust the entire system, which obviously affected everyone else. Well, the Pfister did something almost unbelievable for 1893. Each guest room was equipped with its own temperature regulator. These weren't digital thermostats mounted on the walls like we have today, but each room had a mechanical thermostat connected to a network of valves that automatically controlled the amount of steam flowing into the room's radiator. So if the room became warmer than the temperature the guest selected, the thermostat would partially close the steam valve, which reduced the heat.
Impressive.
As the room cooled, it would gradually open the valve again, allowing more steam to flow into the radiator. It was essentially a primitive version of the heating systems found in many modern office buildings and hotels today. Mm-hmm. The technology had been invented by Professor Warren Johnson, a Milwaukee educator and engineer who believed buildings shouldn't rely on someone constantly walking around opening and closing valves by hand. His automatic control system did the work for them. Well, the Pfister became one of the very first large buildings to showcase this invention. In many ways, the hotel served as a demonstration project, a place where wealthy travelers, business leaders, and politicians could experience the future of climate control firsthand. Imagine checking into a hotel in 1893 after you rode on this drafty train that was heated by a coal stove. Instead of hoping your room wasn't freezing or unbearably hot, you could actually adjust the temperature yourself. It sounds ordinary today, but at the time, it must have felt magical to most people. In fact, historians often credit the Pfister as America's first hotel with individual room temperature controls, and Johnson Controls still points to the hotel as one of the earliest showcases for the technology that helped launch the company. Now, many guest rooms also included private bathrooms. Again, this doesn't sound extraordinary today, but in the 19th century, it really was. Even expensive hotels often required guests to use shared bathing facilities down the hall. The Pfister recognized that wealthy travelers wanted privacy and convenience. And I'm going to say everybody does.
Yeah.
Combined with indoor plumbing, electric lighting, elevators, telephones, and advanced heating systems, the hotel represented the cutting edge of hospitality. In many ways, checking into the Pfister was like stepping 50 years into the future. And I can't imagine, Matt, being, you're spending this much money to stay at a hotel, and then you are showering, bathing, because they didn't really have many shower things, but you're bathing like a college dorm, where you have to go down the hall, take your shower shoes so you don't get foot fungus. And you're like, I spent all this money to share a tub with that guy that is in the room next to me.
Yeah.
Have you seen that guy? Have you smelled that guy? I don't want to bathe after him. You know? Now, the hotel officially opened its doors on May 1st, 1893. Newspapers immediately praised it as one of America's finest hotels. Some even referred to it as, quote, the Grand Hotel of the West. Visitors marveled not only at its luxury, but also the confidence it projected. The Pfister wasn't trying to imitate Chicago or New York. It was announcing that Milwaukee belonged in the same conversation. Ironically, however, success didn't come overnight. The U.S. entered one of the worst economic downturns in history. Just days after the hotel opening, the panic of 1893 sent banks collapsing, businesses closing, and unemployment soaring across the country. Luxury travel dried up almost immediately. Well, Charles Pfister reportedly watched the magnificent new hotel lose hundreds of dollars every day. For a while, it looked as though one of Milwaukee's greatest ambitions might become one of the biggest financial disasters. But the story didn't end there. A year later, political conventions, business meetings, and major civic events began filling the hotel's ballrooms. Word spread quickly, and travelers who stayed there returned home talking about the incredible luxury that they had experienced. Before long, the Pfister had become exactly what its owners envisioned. Not just a hotel, but Milwaukee's grand front porch. A place where presidents, industrialists, actors, musicians, athletes, and ordinary travelers would all pass through the same magnificent lobby. And over the next century, those thousands upon thousands of visitors would leave behind something else besides just memories.
So now we know how the Pfister Hotel came to be. And when the doors finally opened in 1893, the Pfister wasn't another hotel, like Adam said. It was a statement, you know, the amount of money, you know, which more than $1 million. I mean, in 1893. That's what economists call a crap ton of money. And
yeah,
and like Adam went in, it was one of the most technologically advanced hotels in the country. And that the fact that it had fireproof construction, I mean, we how many times have we talked about how dangerous fire was at this time? You know, you got far enough. If you didn't have a fire station next door to your house, you could lose your entire home to somebody accidentally knocking over an oil lamp. Okay. You know, all of that, it had to feel like witchcraft. But here's the thing, for everything that was new about the Pfister, the land underneath it was very, very old. And apparently, it already had a story, because just 4 days after the Pfister Hotel opened, the Milwaukee Daily Sentinel published an interview containing a strange piece of local history. And when I say strange, I mean, considering what people would eventually say about this hotel, it's really, really strange. The article appeared on May 5th, 1893, and the man being interviewed was Charles Milwaukee Siver. Now, Siver was something of a living link to Milwaukee's earliest days. He was born in 1835, and he was long described as, get this, the first white boy born in Milwaukee. Now, I am assuming this is because of the Native American population in that area of Wisconsin. Even
probably
thanks to Alice Cooper, I know that the name Milwaukee comes from Milwaukee, which is a Native American term.
Mm.
You remember that?
Yeah. I don't.
Ever seen Wayne's World?
Yes. Okay. Okay.
That's where I learned that from. So, but because of that, newspapers would often ask him to recall what the city had been like in its earliest form. And the Milwaukee he remembered as a child looked nothing like the Milwaukee of 1893. Certainly not one with a hotel that had adjustable temperature in the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, the city was still becoming a city. And Siver recalled something very specific about the land where the Pfister now stood. According to research by Milwaukee historian Anna Anna Lardinois, Siver told the Sentinel that he once lived in a log cabin on or near that very property. And he remembered something. A private burial ground.
Yep,
there it is.
That's not good.
4 days into the story of the Pfister Hotel, and we already have a burial ground.
Of course.
You know, nothing good has ever followed that sentence.
No, that's true.
But it gets even more interesting because Siver wasn't repeating a vague rumor. He said that when the construction on the hotel began, he went back to the site himself. He was looking for something. He was looking for bones. The remains of people that he believed had been buried there. And according to the account, he couldn't find them.
Hmm.
Now, remember that. Because that version is very different from what you'll hear today. You'll see claims that the Pfister was built on an Indian burial ground. Quotes. You'll see stories that bodies were uncovered during construction. And you'll see confident assertions that graves were disturbed. And that's why the hotel is haunted. But as far as I can find, there is no solid evidence for any of those claims. But what we do have is much more subtle and honestly more interesting. A man with firsthand memory of that land. A newspaper interview published the same week the hotel opened and a claim that a private burial ground once existed there, followed by a search for remains that came up empty, which raises the question, where'd they go? Were the graves moved? Were they relocated? And if they were, to where?
Mm-hmm.
Or did time just simply erase them? You know, were they so old that there just wasn't anything left or not anything recognizable when they started breaking ground for this hotel?
That's possible.
Or were they still there? They just didn't find them. Because there's no documented record of construction crews uncovering a forgotten cemetery beneath the Pfister. There's no verified accounts of remains being removed during construction. So at least none that survived the historical record. But instead, we're left with a burial ground that appears only in one man's memory, and then it seems to vanish. Okay? So it tells you that the story of the Pfister Hotel wasn't originally a ghost story. Because when people talk about the Pfister today, it's easy to reverse engineer this legend. You know, haunted hotel, old building, therefore there must have been a cemetery, and that's how the folklore usually forms. And a ghost story grows up behind it. And the history kind of gets rewritten to support it. But that doesn't seem to be what happened here. The burial ground reference shows up the same week the hotel opens, before any modern haunting narrative even existed. The burial ground story was already in circulation, and that's important. I mean, it doesn't prove anything supernatural, I mean, a former cemetery under a building doesn't automatically make it haunted. Because if that was the case, half of Europe would be just like one continuous paranormal haunt event.
Yeah.
But it does mean that the Pfister's legend didn't just emerge in a vacuum. There's at least a historical thread that runs through it. And that brings us to the figure most often tied to the hotel's ghost stories. And that's Charles Pfister. I mean, Charles was, he was deeply connected to this building. This wasn't just a business venture with his name on the front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his father Guido had envisioned this hotel, but died in 1889 before it could be completed. So Charles carried it forward. He invested heavily and he oversaw all of the construction and its final completion. And when it opened, it was extraordinary. The hotel became a central part of his life. Charles lived there. He entertained there. He did business there. In fact, his art collection helped define the identity of the hotel. And even today, pieces tied to the Pfister family remain a part of the hotel's atmosphere. So when Charles died in 1927, it wasn't hard for this legend to form, with people saying, maybe he never left. And according to modern Pfister folklore, he didn't.
That's hard to say, Pfister folklore.
Pfister folklore. That's right.
He didn't.
Now, guests and staff have long attributed strange activity to him. A well-dressed older man seen in the hallways. A figure that resembles Charles himself. The sense of someone watching over the building. Not necessarily watching you, but watching over the building as if the owner is still making rounds. And unlike many haunted locations, Charles isn't described as being threatening. He doesn't chase anybody. He's not attacking anyone. He's certainly not forcing people to leave. He's not standing at the foot of the bed screaming or pulling the covers off of anyone. It's almost like he's management.
Well, you would think, you know, we see that trying to get people to leave from hotels that were not originally hotels. Like they were somebody's private home.
Yeah.
And then turned into a hotel or a bed and breakfast. This, it does seem like it, because it's always been a hotel, maybe he just wants you to stay at his hotel.
Yeah.
And he's going to try to be hospitable more than, you know, get out of my bedroom. What are you doing here?
It certainly fits with the narrative of his life. You know, this was his pride and joy, not only his, but his father's. So this was a family legacy. He wanted people to come there and stay there and enjoy themselves. I mean, that would make him the happiest man no longer alive if people continued to come to his hotel and enjoy their stay. So, I mean, like I said, he spent so long running that hotel that even death didn't get him off the schedule. But there's a problem with attributing everything that goes on at the Pfister to Charles, because some of the reported activity doesn't fit him at all, like voices, movement, physical contact, objects moving on their own. And in some accounts, the presence of children, which I know Adam's like, where do I sign up? I want to stay there tomorrow night.
All about that.
But Charles Pfister wasn't a child when he died. And remember, Sivers' recollection suggests people may have been buried on the land long before the hotel was built. So if something is happening here, why assume that it's all Charles?
Right, right.
Maybe Charles is just the most recognizable name attached to the story. You know, you see the old hotel, you hear the name Pfister, you see a photograph of Charles Pfister, and suddenly he becomes the default explanation. But what if he's not the only one? I mean, who else was buried there? And how many? And when?
Yeah.
You know, maybe most importantly, when did these stories actually begin? Because this is where things get weird. we've talked about haunted hotels, and you kind of see a timeline, you know, a continuous record of ghost stories stretching back, you know, in this case, all the way to the 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we find, at least not in any consistent historical record. There is a gap. The hotel opened in 1893 and Charles died in 1927, and the Pfister continued to operate for decades. You know, presidents stayed there, celebrities stayed there, business leaders, politicians, performers. I mean, thousands upon thousands of guests passed through, and yet the well-known ghost stories, you know, the ones that have names and dates and firsthand accounts, don't really become widely documented until much later. And, you know, that's pretty important, because I'm not going to claim that people have been seeing Charles Pfister continuously since 1927 unless I can actually find those reports.
Right.
And I couldn't. I mean, there's a chance those stories existed for a long time, you know, and that people just kind of quietly shared them between themselves. Maybe the employees and the locals knew, you know, you stay at the Pfister, you know, that you may see Charles Pfister's ghost walking around.
Right.
But they just weren't written down. They weren't documented. You know, but there's a chance that this reputation developed slowly over time. But either way, by, you know, the modern times, something changed. So now we don't just have stories. We have witnesses, and not anonymous ones. We're talking about people that you've heard of. Professional athletes, actors, musicians, people who have no reason to be subtle when they say, something happened to me in that hotel. And for some reason, one group seems to run into more of these experiences than almost anyone else. And that's Major League Baseball players.
Huh.
So as you know, as I said, this place has got a hook that we haven't seen before. And this is it. Major League Baseball players have more experiences at the Pfister than anyone else.
You wonder why. Like, do you think? Here's just a theory I've got.
Okay, here we go.
If it is Pfister,
yeah,
maybe he was a huge baseball fan back then. And when a baseball player comes in now, they experience him because he's trying to, you know, get their attention or something.
That's a good theory, because
big fan of you, love baseball.
That fits with my theory as well.
You're not as good as Babe Ruth, but I like it. I just picked a name.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's all right.
Baseball player. There's probably not a famous baseball player listening to us right now, but if you are, sorry. I didn't mean any slight.
I probably couldn't name a soccer player right now. I mean, the only reason I know any soccer players' names at all is because the World Cup just happened. That's, you know.
Well,
I don't watch it. I don't follow it.
Only baseball player name that pops into my head when anybody brings up baseball is Nolan Ryan.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're from Texas. And you should know Nolan Ryan. It's
exactly.
Probably an offense if you didn't.
I think so, especially since he has a meat company here now. So.
Oh, man. But
Nolan Ryan beef. Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't realize that.
Yep. Tastes good and might get hit with a baseball. I don't know.
Just as an aside, we're talking about Nolan Ryan. You know, this was a national thing, I'm assuming, but he did ads for a building supply company called Yellowwood.
Yeah. You
remember that?
Yep.
You know, they ran like probably in the 90s. I think it was after he was retired. So it'd have been like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe mid to late 90s.
I feel like I have seen Yellowwood commercials recently.
Oh, they're still around. Yeah, they did. I've not seen any more commercials like that, but you know, they were humorous. You know, it wasn't like, hey, I'm Nolan Ryan for Yellowwood. I mean, they were funny, and he was a part of it. So, you know, anyway, I digress. But the fact that it's these Major League Baseball players that have all these experiences, that's where the Pfister story becomes less of just an old haunted hotel, and it becomes really one of the strangest collections of paranormal accounts that I've ever talked about on this show. Okay? Because apparently ghosts at the Pfister really, really like baseball. And if some of these players are telling the truth, the ghosts may actually be Brewers fans. So, like I said, the ghosts at the Pfister like baseball. And this this is where it kind of goes just off to the side. We're no longer dealing with somebody's cousin who stayed here in 1974 and swears he saw something at the end of the hallway. We have names and dates and teams and professional athletes telling these stories publicly. By the early 2000s, the Pfister's reputation had become well known among MLB players that were traveling to Milwaukee. And one of the earliest players to go on record was Adrian Beltre. In 2001, Beltre was playing third base for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, during his stay at the Pfister, he began hearing knocking at the door to the room. And that's creepy, but you can at least deal with that.
Yeah.
Then his television began turning on and off. And so did the air conditioner.
Nah, and don't mess with my AC, man.
And then he started hearing pounding from behind his bed.
What?
Yeah. That's that. Now, you know, the door, the TV, even the AC, we've heard those before. Pounding from behind your bed. You know, that's a different one. But
yeah, I man, that would freak me out, I think, more than a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because there shouldn't be anything behind my bed.
Right. The wall, you know, that's it.
Right. Right.
And
growing up, you know, you always worry about stuff under your bed. Yeah. You always worry about that monster under your bed. Now, holy crap, there is a monster under my bed and it's pounding behind the headboard. Right.
And, you know, I know a lot of people could say that, oh, well, there was an adjoining room. I don't know, you know, where his room was. That's not documented. Was where his bed was it positioned where there was another room behind him or something? I don't know, but when Beltre describes
a couple that was getting excited,
I knew you were going to go there. But you may think that, but when Beltre describes the pounding, he says it was like someone was hitting the other side of the headboard with an open hand. This was not the wall. This was the actual headboard, okay? So if the headboard is up against the wall, like it is in most rooms, okay, he's saying that this pounding sounded like someone between the wall and his headboard smacking it with an open hand.
That's
weird.
Yeah, no, I don't like that.
You know, TV turns on and off, there's an electronic problem. Okay, air conditioner acting weird. It's an old hotel. But when something starts beating on the headboard behind you.
Yeah, right.
Okay, time to pay attention. Now, another Texas Rangers star, Michael Young, had an experience that, I really dig because his reaction was basically, okay, fine, you can haunt me, just shut up. Young said he was asleep after a night game when he woke to the sound of footsteps inside his locked hotel room. Not outside the door, inside, in the room. And he listened, and he heard them again. But instead of running out of the room, Young apparently addressed whatever was in there, basically by saying, okay, you can stay, you can hang out, you can make yourself comfortable. Just don't wake me up. Yeah. And according to Young, it stopped. Okay.
Dude, I love that response because that sounds like something I would do.
Yeah. Please.
You know, just let me sleep, man. I did that at my old house in Tennessee. Remember? Noises. And I was like, dude, I got to wake up early. Just let me sleep.
Right.
And it quieted down.
Right. Then in 2006, things get a little stranger. Now, Matt Traynor was with the Florida Marlins when the team stayed at the Pfister. And Traynor stopped by teammate Taylor Tankersley's room to see what he was going to do for dinner. And while they were talking, both men heard tapping. Now, they couldn't determine where it was coming from. And later, Traynor claimed he heard what sounded like a child yelling in the hallway. But another member of the Marlins organization reportedly had an even more frightening experience. Strength coach Paul Fournier told Traynor that while lying in bed, he suddenly found himself unable to move. And while he was lying there paralyzed, he felt cold air rushing over him. Now, that story raises another possibility: sleep paralysis. Now, you're conscious, you're not able to move. And it's combined with the sensation that something is in the room with you. Okay. That's the best description. And, you know, Adam knows better than anybody.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that's what happened to him. You know, Fournier had an episode of sleep paralysis, and it just happened to coincide with Traynor having this experience. Okay. When you're already staying in a hotel that everyone keeps telling you is haunted, and then you wake up unable to move while something cold seems to pass over your body, you're probably not lying there thinking, ah, what a fascinating neurological phenomena. You know, no, you're thinking, I'm being attacked by something spiritual or demonic or something. Yep. You know, you're freaking out. Now, Traynor became interested enough that he later organized an amateur ghost hunt inside the Pfister. And they went specifically looking for Charles. And honestly, to Traynor's credit, he admitted they didn't find anything. No apparition, no Charles, nothing. And it's worth mentioning because if we're going to tell you when somebody claims they saw something, we should probably tell you when they went looking and didn't. Then there's Carlos Gomez. And I think this is the best one. Gomez was playing for the Minnesota Twins when he had his encounter. He was taking a shower in his room when he heard voices. He gets out and he notices that his iPod is acting strangely. There is static coming from it. Static from an iPod, not a radio. An iPod.
I've never had that happen before.
So, Gomez does what most people would do. He turns it off. Problem solved. Except, the sound starts again. He grabs the iPod, and it suddenly changes songs. Remember, he just turned it off.
Yeah, why is it changing?
And this is his iPod. This is not something that was already in the room turning on and off. This was his. Okay. Yep. He bolts from the room and goes downstairs before he had finished putting his pants on. Now, look, I'm not judging here because everybody's got a paranormal threshold. Okay. You've got an amount that you can take. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you go over that amount, pants are optional. Okay. You know, but
I'm going to use that excuse.
But in interviews later, Gomez made it very clear that he did not enjoy his stay at the Pfister because of this. And he said he was scared to go there and complained that teams kept getting booked into the same hotel despite players saying that they couldn't sleep. I mean, you got to consider that. I mean, if you're going to take your team to Milwaukee to play a baseball game or multiple games, as they usually do, you want those guys to be able to leave the park, go get a good night's sleep, and be ready to play the next day. If they're all hyped up because something is disturbing their sleep, that is no good, okay?
No.
But teams kept coming there, okay? Now, let's go to 2010. And this one is a little bit harder to just laugh off. The Texas Rangers were staying at the Pfister. Pitcher C.J. Wilson later described some strange things that happened in his room. He heard scratching noises coming from the walls. And at one point, a lamp reportedly began turning itself on and off repeatedly. Now,
that ain't cool.
Wilson described it as going, quote, disco style. Okay, so it's blinking.
Oh, so it's not just
on and off. Yeah, it's like off.
Wow.
Now, his teammate Colby Lewis had a much worse night. According to Wilson, Lewis woke sometime around 1:30 in the morning and saw what he described as a skeletal apparition in his room. Hmm. Not a shadow, not a light, not footsteps, an actual figure. And Lewis was apparently shaken so badly that the next day he sought out the team captain or team chaplain. And he also skipped a scheduled ESPN radio interview. I mean, this really got to him.
That messed him up. Yeah.
And here's another detail that makes this particular story pretty fascinating. Lewis wasn't the only Ranger who had a weird night. Reports indicated that several other members of the team experienced unusual activity right around that same time. So now you've got multiple players in different rooms in the same hotel on the same night talking about strange things happening. Now, does that prove that it's ghosts? No. But it definitely makes that story better.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, really does.
For sure.
Now, in 2012, Bryce Harper checks in, a name that probably most people that aren't even baseball fans have heard. Harper was a rookie with the Washington Nationals at the time. And his Pfister story is good because nothing dramatic happens to him. There's no apparition, no screaming, no ghost standing over him. Harper just goes to bed.
Pounding.
Yeah, he just goes to bed. It's normal, you know. But before he goes to bed, he lays out a shirt and a pair of pants on a piece of furniture near the foot of the bed. And then he goes to sleep. The next morning, his clothes are on the floor. And the piece of furniture they had been sitting on is all the way across the room against the wall.
Really?
Now, Harper is confused, to say the least.
Sure.
So his first thought was somebody came into my room. Mm-hmm. Maybe a teammate was messing with him. So he checks the door, and it's still latched. So he starts asking his teammates if somebody was pulling a prank. Remember, he's a rookie. You know, rookie pranks are a big thing. Mm-hmm. But nobody admits to it. And Harper gets sufficiently freaked out that he asked the hotel to move him. His attitude was basically, I don't want to talk about it. Just get me out of this room. And that makes it more creepy, okay? Because it's one thing to jump up and start telling this story to all of your teammates or the news or local beat writer or something. It's another thing for you to go, okay, that's weird. I mean, that's really weird, and I'm not so sure that I want to spend another night in that room. You know, I mean, truthfully, if I woke up and my clothes were on the floor, I would definitely think that was strange if I remembered setting them out. Now, that's another thing. If you're one of those people, which I'm not, that will set out clothes that you're going to wear the next day before you go to bed.
No,
that is a very specific task that you do. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just grab a shirt and a pair of pants and put it in a chair. Okay. You plan ahead. What am I going to wear tomorrow? Whether it's because I've got to dress a certain way or I want to be casual. I want to be professional. You know, I've got to do an interview, whatever. You put some forethought into it. So saying, I know that I put these clothes on this piece of furniture last night because this is a thing I do. And then finding it on the floor would be weird. Okay. Like, I don't understand. I'm in this room alone. Why are my clothes on the floor? But then to find the piece of furniture that they were laying on the other side of the room up against the wall, that's really freaky. I mean, if you, I can't imagine that somebody was able to sneak into his room, pull this off as a prank, not wake him up, and then manage to latch the door from the inside
right
as they were leaving. That's pretty tough. But with any good prank, you gotta let them off the hook at some point. You gotta mm-hmm. have a laugh.
Take credit for it at
yeah.
some point.
Yeah. I mean, I used to talk about people that could play the long game on a prank or a joke, you know, could do mm-hmm. something and then just let it ride. And I've done that. Okay. I've done it. I'll share a little quick one that I did that I'm kind of proud of. I was over at my parents' house, and this was years ago. My parents had like a little whiteboard calendar by their refrigerator. It wasn't yeah. like on the refrigerator. It was on a wall. There was a cabinet next to it. So it wasn't something you had to go over and look at it if you wanted to see it. So I took the little marker and I wrote something to the extent of, Matt is our favorite child, down at the bottom. And I didn't say anything, and I just left, and I completely forgot about it. And I mean, maybe even a year later, my sister is in town visiting and she sees it. Oh, no geez. One had seen it since, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
And they got the biggest laugh. And of course, when they told me, I was like, of course I wrote that. That's hilarious. You know, I'm glad it lived for so long that we can all laugh about it now. I wasn't going to go, no, I didn't put that on there. I wasn't going to deny mm-hmm. doing it. It was funny. So I can't imagine yeah, teammates right. doing something like this and then at the park later not going, ha, 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 we got you. Nobody yeah. owned up to it. So it's a yeah. really, really creepy one.
That would be a good one to take credit for because of the skill involved in getting in there and getting out of there and latching the door. You know, you would think whoever did it would want to take credit for it.
Yep. All right. So now the next story. Former Cincinnati Reds second baseman Brandon Phillips. He had a very simple experience. He checked into his room. And the radio turned on by itself. Phillips went and turned it off, took a shower. When he came back, the radio was playing again. And that's it. It's a whole story. And, you know, sometimes those are weird enough that, you know, they're worth mentioning. I have one of those stories. House I lived in before this house. I had a radio that would periodically just turn on by itself. No reason for it. It just would. You know, television would randomly cut off. The weird part about my story was it was always when we mentioned one particular deceased person's name and it would happen.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it was simple. Nobody was afraid. But it was weird and it was worth mentioning because it makes people go, well, that's really weird, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's just, you know, you just stack it on top of the other ones and you're just like, man, yeah. what is going on?
I'm realizing, Matt, we need to have a listener contact some Major League Baseball players for us and get them on Graveyard
yeah.
Calls to discuss some of this stuff. Because I would guarantee this, the Pfister is not the only place that it's like musicians.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you stay in so many hotels across the country, you've got to have experienced something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
So if there's any professional athletes out there that want to come on and discuss ghost stories that they have encountered in their travels, hit yeah. us up.
And these keep going. I don't know this player. G-Man Choi. He played for the Angels in 2016, and he stayed at the Pfister. And unlike most of the players, he didn't really know the hotel's haunted reputation. The first night there, he woke up and described what felt like a spirit in bed with him.
Oh, wow.
You know, for most folks, that's the end of your stay. I'm not
yeah,
coming
no
back.
Thanks.
You know?
Mm-mm.
But Choi felt differently because he told the MLB that he had seen ghosts plenty of times. He described another experience years earlier after back surgery where he woke up feeling something pressing against his chest, and then he felt the mattress sink in beside him. On another occasion, he said he felt something crawl up behind him, hug him, and murmur into his ear. Now, that may have just been an obsessed fan that was,
yeah,
that was very good at hiding themselves. But when reporters asked him how he felt about spending another couple of nights in the Pfister, he made the joke. He said, well, I hope it's a girl, you know. And, you know, if you get to a point where you're now flirting with the ghost, you win. Okay.
You've hit another level. Yeah.
You got it. But that same year in 2016, Pirates manager Clint Hurdle revealed that one of his players had become frightened enough at the Pfister that he called him in the middle of the night. You call your manager, okay? That, for a baseball player, that's calling your boss in the middle of the night, telling him, I'm scared, okay? Now, Hurdle would not reveal who the player was, but apparently this player's television had turned itself on twice, and he genuinely got scared. So Hurdle went to his room to calm him down and sat there for a while, and the television stayed off. So Hurdle left. And whoever that player was, never wanted his name attached to this story, which means somewhere out there, there's a former Pittsburgh Pirate who knows exactly what happened in that room and still isn't telling the story.
Yeah, right.
And then we get to 2018, which this may be the greatest Pfister baseball story of all.
Uh-oh.
The St. Louis Cardinals are in Milwaukee playing the Brewers. Pitcher Carlos Martinez is staying in the Pfister, and Martinez claims he sees a ghost. Not a noise, not something turning on and off, a full-on apparition. Meanwhile, teammate Marcell Ozuna apparently has an experience in his room, too. So now you've got two Cardinals claiming they have seen something. And these guys do exactly what you would expect grown professional athletes to do when confronted with the supernatural. They get everybody together. Martinez, Ozuna, Tommy Pham, the coaches, other members of the team, and they all go to Francisco Pena's room. And Martinez starts filming and posts the whole thing on Instagram. And in Spanish, he tells everyone, they're in Milwaukee, he has just seen a ghost, Ozuna saw one too, and now everybody is together in Pena's room. Because apparently nobody wants to sleep alone.
Yeah, right.
And then Martinez delivers what may be the best quote in the entire history of the Pfister Hotel. If the ghost comes back, they're all going to fight it together. You know, I don't know how you fight a ghost, okay? But if it...
I don't know, but I like that.
If anyone's going to figure it out, it's going to be a bunch of MLB players, okay?
Yeah, right.
But the next day, Martinez pitches, and he gets absolutely shelled, okay? Milwaukee beats St. Louis, and so naturally, Martinez blames the ghost, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us all the way back to Charles Pfister. Because if Charles really is wandering around that hotel, maybe we've misunderstood him. He's not angry. Maybe he's not trapped. And he's not really trying to scare anybody. But maybe he just realizes that if he keeps visiting opposing players at 2 in the morning, the Brewers have a little better chance to win the next day.
There you go. I like it.
He's just a dedicated Milwaukee Brewers fan. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Even in the afterlife, he'll do whatever he's got to do to make them have a winning streak or something.
And all these players have unique experiences. And if you take them individually, you can explain almost all of them away. Bad wiring, old plumbing, sleep paralysis, pulling pranks. It's a 100-year-old hotel making 100-year-old hotel noises. And once baseball players knew the Pfister was supposedly haunted, expectation became part of the equation. You walk into that room already waiting for something to happen. That's what makes it fascinating, because eventually the question becomes, how many independent stories do you have to collect before the collection becomes interesting? Because by now, it's not one ghost story. It's baseball tradition. Players arrive in Milwaukee. They check into the Pfister. Somebody tells the rookie it's haunted. Everybody has a laugh and they go to bed. And every once in a while, somebody comes downstairs the next morning with a story. And more than 20 years after those early accounts began circulating, they are still happening. 2023, Oakland's Brent Rooker stayed at the Pfister. And Rooker already knew the stories. And during the night, his television suddenly turns itself on. And then it happened again. Okay? Now, it's not a huge thing, but it's a common thing. And Rooker kind of accepted it. And he was like, if all they want to do is choose what they watched on television, he was fine with them hanging out. And the next day, Rooker hit a home run. So maybe Charles liked him. Okay?
Yeah.
But you have to admit, the Pfister Hotel has one of the most extraordinary collections of paranormal experiences of any place we've talked about. I mean, you like I said, individually, it's kind of weird. But when you add them all up, you're just like, holy cow. You know, well, what in the world?
And who they come from. The people they come from make it very unique. Yeah.
And it's not just baseball players. Really, they're just the largest group, okay? In 2006, actor Joey Lawrence stayed at the hotel with his family while he was on Dancing with the Stars. And according to Lawrence, during the night, one of his daughter's toys suddenly began activating by itself. You know, lights and sounds and woke everybody up. But, you know, that we've all experienced that probably. If you've got little kids, you've had one of their toys go off in the middle of the night. Well, he got up and he checked everything and it was all fine. But then the bathroom light came on by itself. And then the toys started up again. You know, but he said, this is kind of weird. You know, turned off the light, put the toy away, turned it off. But it didn't end there. Lawrence claimed that the next morning, as the family prepared to leave, Lawrence made a remark about whatever or whoever might be in the room with them. And according to him, the metal covers on the air conditioning unit suddenly fell off. Or like in some stories, shot across the room. I don't know which is accurate. Okay.
Yeah, saying, probably fell off,
shot across the room. Either way, it's kind of weird. Those things don't typically do that. Okay. Right. Lawrence told this story publicly on Celebrity Ghost Stories. And then in 2021, Megan Thee Stallion stayed there. And she apparently hadn't gone there looking for ghosts. They found out the hotel was haunted after they were already checked in. Okay. And she said she had closed the door separating her bedroom from another room in her suite, and she began hearing noises outside the bedroom. And when she checked, things appeared to have been moved around. Well, she immediately thought somebody had gotten into her room, but her door was locked. Then she went into the bathroom and started hearing banging. She says she thought it was coming from another room, maybe even another floor, which is perfectly reasonable. Until somebody in her crew started researching the hotel and discovered, oh, by the way, we're staying in the most haunted hotel in Milwaukee. Yeah.
That's a good time.
So she posted this experience online and really seemed more amused than she was scared, which is another good thing about these stories. None of them are actually terrifying. Well, I don't know. The skeletal apparition, that probably would have got me. Okay.
Beating on the wall, maybe, would have got me.
But a lot of it is, that's weird, you know, except for the apparitions, okay? If you see a ghost.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's another level.
That's way up here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there are perfectly reasonable explanations for a lot of this. I mean, the Pfister is an old building, and old buildings do make noises, and pipes knock around, and heating systems behave strangely, and electrical systems do malfunction, and, you know, hotel staff may move furniture around, usually not in your room while you're asleep and throw your clothes on the floor.
Right.
But
right.
Things do happen.
It could happen. Maybe.
And when somebody tells you you're staying in a haunted hotel, every little noise is something paranormal. Okay. And that's important with the baseball stories because players have been telling each other that the Pfister is haunted for decades. So by now, some guys probably know the stories before they even get into Milwaukee. Okay. So there's an expectation there, and that matters. But you start adding everything together, the burial ground account from 1893, stories surrounding Charles Pfister, employees and guests reporting strange activities, Joey Lawrence, Megan Thee Stallion, and this crazy collection of MLB players who have spent more than 20 years describing everything from malfunctioning electronics to voices to moving furniture to something getting into bed with them. Come on. And that's when it becomes difficult to dismiss the Pfister as just an old hotel. Okay. I think there's enough here that the legend has kind of taken on a life of its own. And somewhere along the way, Charles Pfister became the face of it. You know, the man that built the hotel, he lived there, filled it with art, entertained guests, and supposedly never stopped checking in on the place after he died. And if that's true, he doesn't really seem all that angry about it. Because for the most part, he seems content to just wander around and move a few things and turn on a television and maybe scare the heck out of some visiting baseball players. Mm-hmm. But apparently he does everything in his supernatural power to help the Brewers, you know, which, you know, if you're going to spend eternity in a luxury hotel, it's not a bad way to do it, you know? So
true.
You know, if you've ever stayed in the Pfister and you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear footsteps in your room, you know, don't panic. You know, it might be your imagination, but it might just be Charles Pfister checking his hotel. And if you're scheduled to play the Brewers the next day, you might want to get another room, you know? So,
right. Because then he might not just be making sure the temperature control is working.
That's right. That's right. But what do you guys think? I mean, do all of these stories add up to something? You know, I mean, I think even if you take a few of them, you know, it's really fascinating. But when you look at all of them, and I love the fact that these are guys that are willing to share what they've experienced, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid to, you know, get on a mic, get on Instagram or tell a reporter, man, this hotel is creepy and I couldn't sleep last night because something was in the room with me and I had a terrible game today. Right. Because can you imagine that post game interview? Why do you think you played so bad today? Because I was up all night chasing a damn ghost around my room.
Yeah, right.
That would be the headline of the sports page the next day. I mean, no doubt.
For sure.
But, you know, if you've ever been to the Pfister, if you live in Milwaukee, you probably heard some of these stories. Let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. We've got tons of people in there sharing stories and jokes and all kinds of stuff. It's just a great group of people. Don't forget to go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can listen to the show. You can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise, and you can become a patron. And thank you so much to everybody that has supported Adam and I over the years. It's what keeps us going and allows us to keep putting out new episodes almost every week for you guys. So we really, really appreciate it. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Don't. Please don't tail this guy. I know it's easier. He sounds sure. But listen, you don't want to chase another guy's picks, man. You should see the way he dresses. It's all a monthly subscription where he gets his clothes chosen for him. That's the guy you want to make the pick after? No. The pick should be yours. Do something you actually believe in, and if you're on Underdog and you lock in, you can let him chase your tail. Now you're a dog. Underdog. Make your pick. Unleash your dog.
Terms may apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.